everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends. I am your host, Jason Hobbs, and always I have a relevant guest with me. He's no other than an Emmy award-winning designer and blogger and game writer and a fantastic member of the community, Mike Evans. How's it going, Mike?
Doing great. I've never been called relevant before, so I'm a little flattered and I'm blushing.
But you have been called fantastic?
I have been called fantastic. I'm fucking phenomenal.
All right, this is already starting awesome.
Yeah, so, that's what I'm here for.
Your actual Emmy was... electronic game of the year, is that right?
Yeah, I won the silver Emmy for Hubris, and the damn shame of it is I was too stupid at the time to ship them a copy of the book, so I only did electronic. So I'll take my win, but maybe it could have gone further, don't know, but that was my own stupidity.
That's a pretty great story, though.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's how Emmys work? All right.
Nice. So Mike has his own publishing company. It's called DIY RPG Productions.
Correct.
So that seems pretty self-explanatory. No crazy ideas on the name there, right?
No, not at all. It's, and you'll know my logo by the middle finger. Whether that offends you or not, I can't help you with that. Just honestly, no, it's not directed towards you. But if you do think it's directed towards you, please see my logo. Basically I really was into the punk rock aesthetic. I still am. And I'm really into just taking something and doing it yourself and making it wonderful. And my whole philosophy as a game designer is to give you the tools to do it yourself. And whether that be charts or tables or suggestions, but I don't do fluff. I don't do long-winded narratives because I don't find that appropriate or interesting as a game reader and as a game publisher. So that's hence kind of why that came about.
Yeah, that was a meme for a while a couple of years ago. It's his logo.
You know, it still is. You can still find the hashtags, so I appreciate that.
So you say so, but nobody. Yep. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, that's fair.
All right. So this is pretty cool because I had Courtney Campbell on recently, and yes, he was a longtime blogger. I feel like your blog, The Wrath of Zombies, has been around a long time. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, we're going on 11 years.
Holy cow. That is a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2008. That's like right there.
Yep.
Right.
We're in June. We'll hit the 11-year mark.
It looks like mostly you're just kind of talking about what you're producing when I look at your blog nowadays. Is that what you feel like it is now? Is just
It definitely shifted. You know, like when I started the blog, I had no goddamn clue what I was doing. And I was inspired by at the time, like Chatty DM and Dave Chalker from, I think, Critical Hits was the blog that he started. I was going to say Critical Role, but I know that's the Matt Mercer thing. Mm-hmm. But I think it was Critical Hit and, you know, what they were doing. And then I became kind of friendly with them and started doing my own thing. And it was mostly debating classes and mechanics and stuff of fourth edition, which I'm not a fan of. And I was a fan of third at the time. And then eventually it kind of started becoming my own thing. I did some session recaps, and then I started really getting into the DIY community and reading more OSR stuff. I got really burnt out on third edition and really delved back into my roots. And I really connected with, you know, Jez Gordon and Bat in the Attic, Jeff Rance, and a couple other people, and started rediscovering those books. You know, it, like Newbie DM at the time was going back into OSR kind of stuff, and a whole bunch of other people. And it kind of went that way. I would do charts and tables. I did a lot with Santa Core, if you remember that. I did that for like 3 years and was actively involved. And I had kind of started developing my own Frankenhack OSR system and started developing my own game, and that was Hubris. And every time I get a chance to talk about this, I really applaud him, because if it hadn't been for his simple suggestion, I wouldn't have done this. And at that time I had already released a Firefly hack game, a Shadowrun hack game for Savage Worlds. I did a Vornheim hack of Firefly and Shadowrun. I released a zombie game under my Wrath of Zombie for Shadowrun or Savage Worlds. And I had started doing Hubris and just publishing some stuff. And Jez Gordon messages me one day and he's like, dude, why the hell are you not working to publish this? And I said, because no one will buy it. And he goes, no, literally stop being a dumbass and publish this. And I said, yes. Okay, yeah. Like Jez, like literally is one of my favorite human beings ever. Not only is he damn sexy, but he is a delight. And so he, just that simple encouragement, I said, okay, I guess, yeah, why am I so fearful on this? And then it took me 4 years to, from beginning to end, maybe almost five, to get Hubris out the door. And so, and as that has gone on, and then I started DIY RPG Productions, I stopped doing session recaps so much, or I stopped debating other people's mechanics and have moved forward in obviously pimping my own shit and then people's stuff that I really enjoy. But it has become much more of a vehicle of, okay, yeah, here's a class I'm working on, or here's a mechanic I'm working on, but it is for my own stuff versus debating why white box versus wizards and sorcery or swords and wizardry is what is different about those two books, and you know, like the philosophical differences. So
yeah, that's pretty awesome. So what you didn't really mention at all was DCC when you were talking there, but that's what Hubris is written for.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, so when I started writing Hubris, I had been doing my own Frankenhack system, and one of the things I'm a big fan of, and I also fall into the pitfalls of this too, is I try not to reinvent the wheel. Like, I mean, unless something's really bothering me about a system and I don't like it, I'll move on. But I was trying to find a good fit for this zany idea I had for Hubris, which was I try to do this weird amalgamation of what influences me, which at the time was and still is, you know, Mad Max Fury Road. That wasn't out yet, but that kind of thing. Evil Dead, The Thing, Tetsuo Iron Man, and then like 90s, not shitty metal like Slipknot and Korn and all that, but Pantera and, you know, and then 80s metal. And I was trying to figure that out. And I was, like I said, I was doing my own Frankenhack. And I was like, my God, there's so much work I'm going to have to do to make this a reality. And a bunch of people had been talking about DCC at the time. It was really just starting to get traction in like Google Plus and whatnot. So I was like, oh, okay. And I was hearing back and forths about all the table rollings you have to do and everything. And I was like, well, I kind of like tables. I like the generation that we do and whatnot. And so I decided to, okay, fine, I'll buy the damn book and read it. And I read it and I was like, holy crap, this is literally what I'm trying to do. You know, because I was trying to marry OSR with Warhammer first and second edition, that their tables and the visceralness of it and everything. And I was like, well, son of a bitch, like I'm not going to reinvent this wheel. It's right here for me. And so I spent a lot of time tailoring my book then to Dungeon Crawl Classics. I learned the mechanics, I studied them and started doing it. And that's when I picked up the attention of Harley Stroh and a couple other people. And they started singing my praises, very thankfully, to Joseph. So Joseph reached out to me and said, I heard you're writing a book, please send it to me, you know, whatever. And I did so. And he's like, yeah, no, this is fine. Do it. And so that's kind of where that went.
That's awesome. And I mean, that community, you mentioned Harley, and those guys are all awesome.
Oh,
and,
yeah. No, one, yeah. Harley is sweet.
So I guess the only thing is Death in the New Pink. You didn't mention that. It's really cool, though, that you say you just kind of try to find what system you want to use for the vehicle that you're trying to drive at the time. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. It's Death is New Pink. I had started playing Borderlands a lot, and Mad Max Fury Road had come out at that point, which and I know I've mentioned that twice. That's like probably the best goddamn movie I've seen in 10 years. I was so excited about it. Mad Max's have always been some of my favorite movies, even the goddamn weird Peter Pan scene in Beyond Thunderdome. And I beg my wife to go see this movie with me. And she's like, okay, yeah, fine. It kind of looks interesting from the trailer. And so we watch this movie, and the whole time I'm like wetting my pants, and I get out of this movie and I was like, so what did you think of it? And she looks at me and goes, it's like they made a movie of Hubris. And cause she had been playtesting it with me for about a year at that point. And that made me squeal. Like that, like to me was a major win. And so Mad Max Fury Road, and I'm playing Borderlands, which Borderlands is, if for anyone who doesn't know, it's a great first person shooter for many, many platforms, Xbox, PS4, all computer, everything. And it's just zany, like people who light themselves on fire in hockey masks and blow you up, and midgets with shotguns that when they shoot you, they get knocked over. And I was reading a lot of Tank Girl at the time, and I love Tank Girl. And so I was like, and I'm playing Fallout 4 and all these things. And I was like, I want to play a game where that is all these zaninesses and all these things, but then the players don't give a shit about whether they live or die. Because one of the inspiring things from Dungeon Crawl Classics is the funnel. Like, I think that's the best part of Dungeon Crawl Classics, and it's the thing that people talk about the most, is you have 4 level 0 characters, you don't care how they die, and you don't get butt hurt when your character gets their head shot off by a shark with shotgun eyes or something. And so I wanted to marry those things. And so that's where Death is New Pink came from, is I kind of took all those influences, and then I used the End of the Odds system by Chris McDowell. And it's such a phenomenal rules light system, and he cuts out all the bullshit, and you can literally make a character in 3 to 5 minutes. They die. You're not butthurt that they die, because it only takes you 3 minutes to make another character. And each character has a narrative story with them that you fill in those gaps very quickly. And so it's a really great system. So I did that. And when I was thinking of a title, I wanted to think of, like, you know, everyone's like, well, what does Death is New Pink means? Like, for me, it was like, I was looking at all these people who are like, oh, I'm fat, or I'm all this. Well, pink, black is slendering. Oh no. Well, pink is the new black, and everyone's wearing pink. And I'm like, okay, well then where does that take us? Like when the mod is constantly moving forward and our narcissistic behaviors move forward. And to me, it was like, death is the new fashion mod. You don't give a shit when you die, because who fucking cares? And that is like, death is new pink. So it's like, that's where that title came from. And then I decided I wanted to continue with the OSR aesthetic of black and white art, but I wanted a splash of pink in every image, whether it's a piece where it's someone's tongue, it's a mohawk, it's the blood splattering out of their brain. And so every picture is black and white, but then there's one picture that has this shade of pink, and all the pictures have that same thing. So that's where that game came from. But
and that's a pretty cool, just a design conceptual, you know, board or something. You kind of just went through that, so I think people would enjoy listening to that. All right, so we mentioned G+, of course. Yeah. That's where I think I knew about you. I'm assuming that's where you'd ever heard about who I was.
No. I found out about you from the restraining order, because you kept showing up at my window.
Well, I mean, you have good windows.
Yeah, no, G+ was definitely where I learned about you, and I and Hobbs and Friends. You know, you and I had connected early on through conversations, and both of us have been, I feel like, proponents of each other, and, you know, positive influences and whatnot. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there's another gathering of G+, and it kind of shows you where this whole podcast came from, really, is just the community of G+ and that togetherness and camaraderie that social media platform created. All right. We actually did meet in person.
Yes, we did.
Gen Con, the year that you – no, it was the second year. Yeah, the year after.
Yeah, it was last year. Yep.
Yeah, no kidding. That was pretty fun. I had fun hanging out with you.
Yeah. I wish we could have hung out more. We met at the Embassy Suites at the AfterCon, and then it was like, it's just such a hurly-burly, you know? It's like, I love Gen Con, but it's like, I'm trying to hang out with people, and I'm operating on 4 hours of sleep while hungover the entire time. And then I'm running so many games that I lose my voice, and whatnot. So but yeah, we met, we had a good time, but then it was like, oh, well, there goes Hobbs, and oh, there goes Mike. So
yeah, see you later. Yep. It's over. Bye.
Why are you going next year?
I don't know. I don't really feel like Gen Con was my jam.
Was that your first one?
Yeah, and I only really went for a couple of days. Really, I went to go to the Ennies, really. Ah, so yeah. I always said on the show that
we were up for an award.
Only go if I was up for an award. Yeah. So
yeah, it was my third year. I'm gonna go. I enjoy it. You know, and I get to collaborate with some great people while I'm there. For me, it's the shopping and everything. Yeah, whatever. I can buy it whenever I want, and that's not the big deal for me. The big deal is I get to hang out with Jacob Hurst, you know, from Hot Springs Island. Him and I spend a lot of time together every Gen Con, and he's phenomenal. I get to hang out with Matt Hildebrand. I get to hang out with Kane Kathian, who did Ghost Like Crimes. I get to see Harley. I get to see Jen Brinkman. I mean, I can keep going on these lists. I got to meet you. You know, that to me is why I go to Gen Con. Everything else is superfluous. On that.
Yeah. That's what the cons really are for me as well, is just getting back and seeing the people that I only see at cons.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly.
That's really what it is. So I find myself talking about cons a lot on all of my different podcasts, because I think that evolution of actually starting to go to them and meet other people was so productive for me within the industry, just knowing people, and then also just being inspired by the people that you meet. Mm-hmm. Is pretty awesome. So, all right. So I know that you're obviously very busy. You got a real life, you got a wife, and you got a job, but you also, are you running games at all?
I unfortunately at this juncture only get to run once a month right now. I'm trying to work on maybe just doing some, like, especially with Hangout Shit in the Bed, and I use Discord now, like just doing some pickup games, whether it be Hubris or Barbarians or Death is New Pink, or the Forever Dungeon, which is for Death is New Pink as well. You know, just, hey, I'm bored, want to play a game one night. But I run once a month. We've been playing Barbarians now for almost a year with my home group. So that's basically my gaming right now. And then the rest of it's writing or playing video games.
Nice. So I always talk about what I've been playing.
Yeah, let me hear it.
Kalmata is the game that never ends. I don't even know how many sessions it's up to. I'm going to be running it at RockCon. And then after that, which is a local convention in Rockford in Northern Illinois, near where I live, then I'll be running it at Game Hole, which is in Madison. And I'm running it tomorrow. Nice. Online for my patrons. And we have so much fun playing that. It is a modified BX game, and it's just mass chaos.
Am I looking at the right thing right here online? Surviving Kalmata, A Player's Guide to the Treasure Vaults of Zabadad?
Whatever. Zadabad. What that is, it's based on the Treasure Vaults of Zadabad by Stormlord. So I use that as the base, and then I just changed everything pretty much. So. Yeah. I'm also starting to, I'm always trying to try the new games in the OSR. It's hard to talk about them on shows like this if you don't read them and buy them and look at them and play them. And I hung out with Che Webster of Role Play Rescue, a podcaster, and then the other Jason today, and we made some characters for Low Fantasy Gaming, and I'm going to start running that once in a while. So that was fun. That's about, right now I'm kind of dry compared to what I usually do, which is 3 times a week probably.
Yeah. I looked at that Low Fantasy Gaming, and I haven't backed it on Kickstarter yet, but I'm definitely intrigued by it, especially because Low Fantasy tends to be what I do on. I like gritty fantasy, I guess, but yeah, I'm very intrigued by that.
Mm-hmm. Grim Dark, or just the name Low Fantasy. I'm like, oh, this sounds like Sword and Sorcery, which is not what D&D is, right? It's a high fantasy game. So I'm me too. That's exactly why I've been drawn to it. I'm talking to the author about being on the show and explaining it to us. So get ready for that next Hobbs and Friends episode. It'll be around, not necessarily the next one, but soon. All right. So we're finishing up the introduction, which is a long one, but I mean, we really got to hear about your products, and that's awesome. So everything about you, I usually try to find something about myself and about my guest. They have to tell the listeners something they don't know about you. Do you want to start or do you want me to go?
You go first.
All right. So, a lot of listeners probably know that recently there has been a witch hunt against myself and the podcast Hobbs and Friends. I never really expected to be a person, but I knew it was always around there. When you interview different people, there's always going to be someone who doesn't necessarily think that you should have interviewed that person. And I do know that Macris has now obviously has a very large anti Macris people out there. And I did that interview and I re-released it, and I don't regret doing that. I feel like I have many reasons to. And if you ever want to find out why, I'll probably do some more stuff on Random Screed where I talk personally about it. And they just started a new witch hunt on Twitter this morning after yesterday. But I would like to say about it that I'm not going anywhere. I do what I think is right, because I think everyone has to do what they think is right, because in the end, that's who you answer to is yourself, right? I mean, some people will believe that you answer to God, you'll answer to spirit. But before that happens, you're the last person that you have to answer mm-hmm. to. And so you have to do what you think is right. So I did. And I'm not going to listen to a mob telling me that I should do something else. Make your own decisions, people, and remember, you're the one that has to answer to yourself. And it doesn't have to be serious like that, Mike. It can be anything that you want. Well, so,
no go problem. Ahead, brother. I'm an atheist, so I don't worry about answering to shit. So, not even myself. I just say fuck it all. Like, I answer to myself, and that's the thing. Like, on your, I know this controversy is surrounding you. I understand it to a certain extent. And then on other points, I don't get, like, I don't want to get too far down deep into the weeds on it. It's frustrating to me on so many levels that we can't have conversations, and then it's guilt by association. You're the interviewer, and it goes down to journalism to me on a lot of levels. Like, I get, did you give someone a voice? Yes. Does that personally impact you? Yes. But is it like you are that person? No. Like, to me, it gets very frustrating where there's these guilt by associations, and there's a level of knee-jerk reactions in this modern world where there's not patience. There's not an understanding. It is an immediate snowflake response of, well, this is how I feel about it, so you need to address how I feel about it. And if you don't address mm-hmm. how I feel about it, regardless of any form of ramifications of you, I'm going to boycott you. I'm going to do this. And that's, hey, fine. That's well within your right. But a lot of people don't take the time to consider another side of it. And that to me is mm-hmm. where that gets really frustrating. So like I said, I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole with you. And like that can be a whole Random Screed episode. You want me on it? Woo, I'll jump down the rabbit hole. But for me, a lot of things people don't know about me. I really do try to be. And I think people know this, but I just want to put that out there. Like, I really do try to be the nicest person I possibly can be to people. I know I come off as brusque sometimes and like fucking attitude, but like, I really do try to be as positive as possible. I try to be as gracious as possible with everybody, because I do believe about putting yourself out there. And I do believe that like what you put out, you do get back. With people and being calm and being understanding, is important to me, like of the utmost. So that's something. And then I also believe question the answers, like, and that goes back to what's going on. Question. Oh, well, what's going on? Why is this going on? Maybe there's a factor to it that I don't know. Like, And then also, if you don't like the answer, still be calm about it. Like, getting irate solves nothing. So,
yeah. You know, there's this whole concept of unfriending people and trying to deplatform them. I think it hurts more when it's people that you personally know and have met, and then they decide, you're betraying me by doing something I don't agree with, so I'm going to tell the whole world and try and grab up a mob and burn you down.
You
know what?
Fine. You, like, I mean, this is going in a different way, and names will be nameless, but and this is different, so it's not the same gravitas, but like when I first started blogging and I first started writing, people would reach out to me and be like, dude, if you want to make it big, if you want to make it successful, quote unquote, like I have, you need to lose the middle finger as your logo. You need to stop saying fuck. You need to stop, you know, your blog, you say fuck 18 times in one blog post. And I'm like, well, I can't believe you counted those fucks, because I don't give a fuck. You know, and they were like, you got to do these things. And I was like, no, I don't. And, well, you're going to not have followers. I'm okay with that. Like,
you have to answer to yourself in the end. If that's who you are and that's who you want to be, then that's who you should be. And
yeah,
who are you hurting by that, really? You
and
know,
and that's the thing. Like, and again, I try to be the nicest person. I'm not going to side with skinhead. I'm not going to side with this. Like, can I, again, going down that rabbit hole a little bit, can I interview a person that has these things? Yes. But does that make me a skinhead? No, like, you have to try to find an understanding of person. That's also called sociology, by the way. Like, you know, like, you talk to people, you learn about them, you learn how to reach them. So
I agree, man. And I think we did a good job. I am going to have a show, probably a Hobbs and Friends show, where I really go deeply, and maybe with Tim DeShane, is a friend of mine, who doesn't he doesn't think it was the right thing to do. So it might be a really good way to get our ideas out there.
He's a great guy. I think the world of Tim. I send him sexy pics all the time. So,
let's not talk about that. Now you are losing points.
Not at all. Not at all.
Oh, not those kind of sexy pics, you mean?
He calls me his money bunny.
Awesome. All right. So, we talked about the blog and we talked about some things. Right now, you have a Kickstarter going. You mentioned it briefly, Barbarians of the Ruined Earth. Tell us about it.
Yes. All right, so Barbarians of the Ruined Earth is a game. It uses Black Hack, and it's inspired by Thundar the Barbarian, if any remembers that wonderful cartoon from the 1980s. It came out in 80, I believe, and went to 83, and it's what Hasbro ripped off for He-Man. It's got some Pirates of Dark Water, which was an amazing cartoon in the early 90s that was also sword and sorcery that a lot of people didn't get to sample. I really recommend buying both of those on Amazon. And then obviously some Mad Max Fury Road in there. And years ago, I was hanging out with Wayne Snyder. He's in the DCC community. He's a great guy, talented artist. He's the guy that has the wizard van. Everyone, if you see his art, it's hashtag it's wizard time. We were hanging out at his house, and he's like, dude, have you ever seen Thundar the Barbarian? I'm like, I don't think so. And he's like, dude, and he puts it on. And then I realized that when I was a kid watching this, I thought it was He-Man.
Oh, really?
And I just, cause blonde hair and a sword, like, you know, and She-Ra and Ariel or the priestess or whatever her name is.
That's right.
And Ariel. That's so right. It, like, when I was 4 years old, that all got confused in my brain. And, so we watched this episode, and it just blew my mind. It's Attack of the Amazons. And I was just like, holy God, they have a shark sorceress. They have a mutated spider in an underwater nuclear facility. And so I immediately started kind of writing this game that was inspired by it. And it's been done for about a year, and I've just kind of been sitting on it because of other projects and obviously real life work. And finally, I launched a Kickstarter for it, and it's successfully funded now. It's still got 16 days. We're $1,500 from the next stretch goal, which is a module for it. You know, it's all done by me. A lot of the art's done. The layout is done. It's just now funding the rest of the art. And then obviously some other projects for the book.
So it's not your first Kickstarter, right? Death is a
Mutual. No, this is this is my third. Fourth, if you want to get technical. So my first was Hubris, that successfully funded. My second was Demon City with that successfully funded. And then I had run Barbarians. It's now the second go at it. The first go, I really wanted to do a full print run, 3,000 copies by Friesens, which is the company that did Maze of the Blue Medusa, and the Hot Springs Island books. They do phenomenal production values, but it's expensive. And so the Kickstarter goal was $24,000. We got about $12,200, and then it died. That was the unfortunate reality of it. So I went back, I shaved off the production costs, and it was just brass tacks at $6,000 to pay for the rest of the layout, to pay for the art, all the stuff that's going into it. And then that is the, I mean, the book has a lot of art in it for a hunt, and it's all full color. So it's for a book that is 168 pages. There is a lot of art in this book, and I wanted there to be a lot of the art. I wanted this to be a Saturday morning cartoon graphic novel book. So it's funded. Like I said, we're at $8,000, as of right now. I have the page up. I'm going to say what we have, 'cause I'm egotistical like that. We're at $8,091, and the next stretch goal is at $9,500. So I'm really happy with it. You know, even if this, it doesn't get a dollar more it funded, I'm right. happy.
Yeah. I was,
so yeah,
that was one of the things I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit. So, 'cause people do Kickstarters, and most of the times the one we hear about are the ones that funded and people got and were happy with, or they didn't get. What, how was it mentally to go through not having it fund originally? You know what I mean? Well, how did you get through that? Or you want to talk about that?
No worries. No worries. I might cry a little bit. No, it was okay. So I knew it was a long shot, because I'm a very big believer in keeping it simple, stupid. We've all heard the nightmares of Kickstarters that fund and then they go bankrupt, or they don't understand the work of things. I mean, there's Kickstarters I funded 2 years ago, and I got the adventure finally, and I'm like, wait, what? I forgot all about this. Mm-hmm. And I get that, because you're excited and you want your project to do so well and you offer these great things. But then you forget about the work, you forget about your depression, or you forget about your kids and their school and your work, and all these things are the adversity and the obstacles to get there. And then the cost, you know, like a lot of people, they're like, oh, we're going to offer this great adventure for only $1,000. I'm like, how are you paying for that? Like, you know, like, and I don't know they're behind the scenes, but I'm like, I know how much I pay to fund a module, which is about $1,500 to $2,000. And so I'm like, how are you doing that for only $1,000? I don't understand. And then you find out they didn't, because they're knee jerking. And so I knew it was a long shot, because I wasn't offering high backer reward levels. It's like the highest one was $60. And my stretch goals were very realistic. They're no frills. It's like, here's another adventure. My biggest stretch goal is at $40,500 for the new one. And that's literally an animated intro. I want to do a Saturday morning cartoon intro. And I have a production company, everything lined up. But so I knew it was a long shot to get to that 24,000, and I could have done something stupid like, oh, or not stupid. I'm sorry. I don't want to infer that on anybody, but like I didn't want to do one where it's like, okay, I'm going to sell my artist's art. They get a chunk, and then I'm selling these pieces of art at like, you know, $600 or $500 or $200. And these are these levels. I just wanted to keep this simple. And yes, it bit me in the butt. I got to $12,000 and I had over 200 backers. So in the end of the day, was I bummed Kickstarter didn't get funded? Absolutely. But I was proud, because I got to $12,000, which is not something to be ashamed of. That is amazing. Mm-hmm. I was floored by the support. I was ecstatic that people were coming up to me at Gen Con, either when I was at my games or while I was at the Lamentations of the Flame Princess booth, or just trying to get a damn donut at Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, and being like, holy shit, I love your books. I love Barbarians. I backed it, or, you know, I can't wait for it to come out. So there was support for it. I just didn't do the quote unquote high price points to get to that 24,000. And so I changed the model. I lowered the price points, because obviously I don't need to ask for as much money, because it's a print on demand now, and it funded.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's a great story. And I think that is one more, you know, bonus to the thinking of trying to take a positive out of something and turn it into a motivation to be better. Right. So, I mean, it's not going to work this way. So this is what we had. We had obviously 200 people wanted this thing. So if we can change it, then get that book into 200 people's hands. You still, I mean, in some ways, Kickstarter is supposed to be that, right? It's supposed to help you figure out how much or gauge the interest for your project.
Correct. So, absolutely.
And that's exactly what it did. So there's no real reason to consider it a defeat. It's just
no, I don't. It was a learning lesson.
A learning lesson and a stepping stone to success, right? So
absolutely.
All right. So we're starting to get there already. We've been having a great conversation. Do you want to talk about Demon City at all? You mentioned it briefly.
Yeah, sure. So Demon City is a book by Zach Smith. It is a modern horror book, uses tarot cards, and it was a successfully funded Kickstarter. Again, it was my second. We made $72,000 on it. It is near completion. Sean is, I mean, the layout that this guy does is like, I don't know if there's going to be another book like it. Zach's art is great. And then Sean's layout is phenomenal. Like, I mean, it is meticulous, and that's where a lot of this has come in. So he's going to have the layout to me, or the final layout, hopefully next week. It's going to go for a final, type proofing, to make sure that there's all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and the periods are there and everything. And then hopefully that'll be that. And that'll take, you know, like about a month, because it's about a 400-500 page book. I can't remember off the top of my head now.
Are you talking Sean McCoy?
No, I'm talking Sean Chang.
Okay.
He's not really in the RPG scene. He's done a couple other books. He has another job that he does layout for, but he is good. I'm very fortunate now in my RPG career to have worked with some very talented artists or layout artists. I've worked with Alex Mayo, who's phenomenal. He does stuff for Lamentations now full time. Matt Hildebrand, Barbarians, and he's going to be working with me on three other projects already. Sean Chang and then Jez Gordon did another adventure coming out, which is a stretch goal for Barbarians right now, Orcs, which is a Hubris module. But anyways, I know there's a lot of controversy with the Zach situation, and quote unquote, my handling of it. Obviously I don't want to go too deep into it. Just because I'm not going to change anyone's mind about anything. What I will say is that, and I might not win points here, and I guess I don't give a shit, but, you know, basically what happened was allegations. And I do believe everybody has a right to be heard in those allegations, and they have a right to be believed 100%. And I support Mandy's right to that. I also support Zach's right to defend himself. Because to me, above the utmost importance is the right of due process. And the right of that to me is more important than anything. And Mandy's statement was powerful. It was compelling and it's heartbreaking. Zach's statement was methodical and calculating. And he also had witnesses. The challenge that we got into with this is Zach produced witnesses, and, they all had very compelling arguments. They had very compelling narratives. They signed legal documents saying that they could be held in contempt of court and swore for his character. And so then there became the ugly business of, well, we have to believe Mandy, but then we don't have to believe these other women, which then invalidates an argument. Well, why believe one person over another person based on sex? and you know, an act. So that got in there. And then I think the deep rooted problem here that a lot of people don't talk about that I saw was twofold. And unfortunately, and I know we're going down a rabbit hole here again, and I apologize, is and you're, because you're kind of having this now as well, yep, is Zach's behavior beforehand, is the way he argues. And I've told him before, and we've gotten in debates before, I don't think the way he argues is healthy. I don't find it conducive of a, you're not going to change anyone's opinion. And I've said that to him before. I know other people have said it to him before, but that's Zach. I'm not his controller. I can't change a person. That's not my job and my function as an individual. But that is the behavior. That is what people perceived. Whether or not all of the issues were 100% legitimate or not is a completely different point. There is the perception, and then there is also the reality of these things, and on many sides. And so what happened was this has been going on for a decade, you know, basically since I hit it with my axe came out, and Zach was attacked by people saying, we don't need your sluts in my hobby. And your girlfriend's a whore and all these things. And what would you do if someone called your girlfriend a whore? You're going to argue and defend and whatnot. And it's for years, it just escalated. And then it was always, anytime a Lamentations book came out with Zach's name on it, there was a Zach fiasco. There was always a controversy. And so people were fatigued. People were fatigued of the arguing and there was this toxicity. And what I saw happen was Mandy made the accusations, and these happened, and they were terrible, and they're damning, like I said, and everything. And then this mob mentality came out, and it was the same thing that you're going through right now as well. And people were defriending people when they just asked the question of, well, this right now is just an allegation, and she's not brought any facts. There's no pictures. There's no anything. And they're like, you're an evil person and you're an asshole and I'm defriending you now.
There's no good answer, right? There's really no good answer to it.
No, there's not. And that is the thing about it is no matter what, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yep.
As a supporter or a non-supporter. And so then for me, it came down to, so I'm publishing Demon City. I'm legally in a contract to publish a book. I've taken money from Kickstarter backers and I'm publishing this book. I am doing my due diligence as a person to bring a book to product. Yeah. And I'm going to bring it
to fruition. You're going to bring it to fruition. That's what you have to
correct. Correct. And I'm doing my due diligence as an honest person. I've been as transparent as possible. Of course, it's not transparent enough for people. And I can't remember if I had mentioned to you this ever in text, but you know, I had several people messaging me telling me what a horrible person I am. Yep. For not decrying it. And, you know, and again, like I stand by my statement. I believe people need to be heard. I believe people deserve the chance to be believed, but I also believe in due process. And I do not believe in mob mentality. Yep. I do not believe, because what that leads to is it leads to fucking lynching. And, yep, and it leads to bullies controlling a narrative, regardless of the side. And so that's very important to me.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. We cannot become the evil that we despise in order to make
right
it better. That does not help.
Right. It doesn't. It still breeds toxicity and it breeds animosity and it breeds isolation. Yeah. And it breeds divisiveness. And so what a couple people had done is message me saying, you know, I want a refund or whatever. And I can't give a refund. The money's been spent, you know, at the time of the controversy erupting, 46% of the funds had been spent already. And so I offered an alternative. I will donate. If you don't want your book, you can donate it back to me and I will sell those first. Anyone who doesn't want the book, I'm selling those first. So I will not see a fucking dime on any of this. And I will donate the proceeds to two different charities in equal measure. One, the abuse hotline, and another one was No World with Abuse or No World with Violence, or I can't remember honestly off the top of my head. So I'm doing those things. But then I had people messaging me saying that the only just and right thing for me to do would be to give a refund. And if it meant that I went into bankruptcy, then that is what I should do. And to those people, I had I didn't engage in it, and I'm not going to, but I'm like, well, then by that logic of you being a Kickstarter backer, then you should just eat the money you lost, because that's the same logic.
Yeah.
And again, I handled it as transparently as I can, and still to the point where I am now, kill it with kindness. Like, I am understanding you're frustrated. I understand that this is a weird situation to be in. Trust me, I'm in it.
Aware of the situation.
I'm trying to handle all this as best as I can, and I'm trying to be as transparent and neutral as I can. I am here to do a business transaction. I am here to get this, this product to fruition, and it's a gorgeous book, and I'm proud of that. It's a gorgeous book, and it's unfortunate that I'm also that this stuff happened, and it has to work itself out in due process. And if there is damning evidence, if there is something that comes out and it's like, holy shit, this is irrefutable, 100%, I have to deal with that. I have to move forward and figure out what I'm going to do. But it doesn't change the fact that I'm a small-time publisher. I don't have $72,000 lying around. I work full-time for a living, and I have to be as transparent and honest as I have. And I have done that through the whole thing. And the Kickstarter page now, I've been lambasted because obviously during this going on, Zach started getting with arguments with some of the backers, obviously, while this was going on. And it's like, as I said before, I can't change how Zach argues. I can't change any of that. The Kickstarter page is 100%. If it's not about the Kickstarter, I report it as spam. That is it. The Kickstarter page is not a platform for anybody for anything. It is about the book. You can take it to Reddit, to Facebook. You can private message each other. You can email if you want to talk to Zach, or if you want to talk to amongst each other. But for me, the Kickstarter is about the product, and that is it.
Yeah, I do not envy you your situation, sir. You are one of the people who would understand exactly what I'm doing and going through. So I really appreciate – I mean, we had planned on doing this before that. It wasn't the reason that I contacted you.
No, it was not. 100% honesty and, again, transparency. This is an unfortunate coincidence for both of us.
Yeah, but I mean, I appreciate commiserating with someone. Misery loves company. So anyhow, I totally and really want to thank you for being on the show and being so honest and transparent. I mean, that's something that I appreciate. So
yeah, no problem.
I want to take some time, though, to thank my patrons and show some appreciation to those who support me with their dollar bills. So I always give three shout outs. First of all, I want to thank John Laird. This is a friend of TJ Drenner, and he's a patron, and he jumped in to get into Kalmata. Thank you, Mr. Laird. Jason Connerly, another person from the Audio Dungeon Discord that was crazy enough to listen to me and talk to me there, and appreciates all my production that I have here, all the podcasts and such, and jumped in and became a patron. Thank you, Mr. Connerly. Lastly, Sean P. Kelly, my mentor in podcasting. He called me out, rightly so, saying that I hadn't been putting out my episodes like I said I would, and he quit being a patron. And then when I put him out, he said, I'll be back when you actually give me the product that you promised me. It's true, though. I appreciate it for him. He's great, and welcome back, and thank you for being a patron again. If anyone wanted to contact you about any of this, Mike, how would you want them to do so?
You can find me on my blog, which is, if you don't mind me saying it, www.wrathofzombie.wordpress.com. You can find my stuff on there. You can find me on Facebook, Mike Evans. And then also you can reach me on my email, which is DIYRPGProductions@gmail.com.
perfect. And you can add those right below the show notes there. You can just put them right in here. I will paste this outline out to my patrons and all those people.
In the show notes. Okay. Yep. Will do.
Those links. So if you want to contact me, I'm on the Twitters at OSRN Hobbs, or you can contact me there on my private Twitter, which is at Hobbs Indeed. If you want to be awesome, like John Laird, Jason Connerly, and Sean P. Kelly, you can also be a patron of the show, www.patreon.com/OSRN Hobbs. I also have some groups on Facebook. I have a Hobbs and Friends Facebook, a MeWe Facebook, and the Audio Dungeon Discord, so kindly provided by Jose, the panhandler Licario. Get in there, talk. We have tons of games going on. Everyone loves it. Or you can contact me on my Google phone number, 815-200-4894. I think Colin from Spike Pit Green called me on there, but it like rings my phone. Have you ever messed with a Google phone number before, Mike?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, guys. And that's the facts.
Is it really hard?
No, I just put it in, but I think it actually, I thought it would just like be a voicemail that then I could get a file that I could add to the show or whatever, you know, but I think it actually rings my phone. I answer it, I don't hear anything, hang up, and then nothing else happens. So I don't know what I'm doing. We'll get it figured out. Send me an email to Hobbs@HobbsAndFriends.com. Mike, any last words, brother?
Question the answers. Damn the man. Save the empire.
That's right. I hope you enjoy this little trip down Mr. Hobbs's gamerhood. Won't you be my gamer?
Thank you guys so much.
Take it away, TJ.
It's a beautiful day.